And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I'm down to dunk.
And I'm down to dunk. I'm down to dunk. This is J-Dub, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Shea Gibbs-Alexander, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lindy Waters, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Mike Muscala, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Kenneth Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to dunk.
Will you say this is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort?
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleich. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, never at noon on a Friday, is Jay Smith. Jay, what's up?
What's up? It's a post-Thanksgiving for me, pre-Thanksgiving for you.
Yeah, we were just talking about how terrible Thanksgiving was. Oh my gosh, I haven't even celebrated Thanksgiving yet. Just my kids being sick and everything being as awful as possible the last 48 hours. So that's what's going on over here. So we're just going to answer as many questions as we can for you guys today. Hope everybody else had a great Thanksgiving, and if you are just having a regular week and not living in the USA, hope your week is good too. All right, let's go to a question from @7A_mountain. Basically, this is the Thunder artist of the century. She's amazing. Always does post-game art. That she gets some retweets or some love from the Thunder on the reg. So big shouts to her. The question is, do you think Giddey's struggles are caused by the absence of bigs who can roll to the rim this season? If so, how much? She mentions that Favors and he had some comfort in the way that they played. What do you think, Jay?
So I honestly, like, I know that Giddey, there were some struggles from Giddey in that Denver game, and a lot of people have just kind of, it's a continuation of the season. It hasn't been as noticeable to me, honestly. I think that the turnovers are probably the most frustrating thing. He only had 3 in that game against Denver, which is not, I mean, not bad at all, but it is one of those things that it felt like, especially in the overtime, that you would rather have other guys on the floor, which is where it becomes problematic.
Sure.
What creates his problems? I think there's a lot of layers to that. I think that there is some validity to what she said. Not having a big that can, I mean, truthfully, this whole team is hindered by the fact that they don't have really a traditional big. Like when they put Mike out there, you can tell it's a little bit better. But JRE, as much as I love JRE, he's most definitely a power forward and
a small ball spacing center. Like not,
yeah.
And part of it is there's just really nobody on this team that sets a good screen. You know, it's just,
well, and it's almost, I've noticed this early on though, Andrew, is it feels like one of the things that they also don't try. They do a lot more screen and slip than they do, you know, kind of an intentional get some space for somebody. You'll see it occasionally. I'm trying to figure out, like going back a little bit to the Denver game, like you can tell that even with some of the rotations that Mark really is playing a longer game than fans are. And I was frustrated during that Denver game because I was looking at some of the rotations and there was, I think it was in the second quarter, and Denver kind of opened the door to have an opportunity for the Thunder to catch up a little bit. And, you know, once you set Jokic, basically their second unit was a bunch of guys that I'd never heard of. But I was watching that, and that's when Omiyori played. That's when you just had some strange lineups on the floor. And then you look over on the bench and you're like, Kenrich and Wiggins would have been critical to a real attempt to try to make that game something in that second quarter, and they got DMPs, you know. And I don't know if there's something else going on, but it looked like they were fine just on the sidelines. I know Mike's hurt, but
yeah, no,
the
they're
other
fine.
Two guys, it's
no,
just,
they could have
play.
Played. Yeah, I think. So I mean, it's about just wanting to get looks at everybody, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, which is it's hard because what Taylor had mentioned when I was just using our text thread as my the old Daily Thunder comment section is when I was complaining about the game. He's like, Jay, this is you have to remember, like, this is the first time that we've had legit expectations or desires for this team to win. Like, yeah. We're still, because of what's happened so far this season, is our expectations are so different. But that is clearly not the same expectations that Mark has, and we can probably assume not the same as Sam. Anyway, all that to say that, like, we have put a tremendous amount of expectations on Giddy, and I think that's probably pretty unfair. There's a lot of reasons why it's not working. I think some of it is mental. I think he gets frustrated at himself. I think he's trying to do too much. And then trying to fit into an offense where it's a little bit clunky for him. That's why, you know, I'd like to get a little more consistent data on lineups situations. Like, they're not really staggering Giddy and Shea like you kind of wanted them to.
And well, they did earlier in the season. They're trying to get them to play together more.
That's more important than them staggering at this point, right?
Yeah, it felt like they were trying more so to win those minutes when they staggered them. And I think there's intent behind all of it. You know, I don't think this is just Mark just pulling whatever lever he thinks is going to work for them. Like, this is, they have like a set plan. Like, hey, like, and they'll have conversations with these guys. They've done this with Jeremiah. They've done it with Wiggins. They've done it with Kenrich. They've done it with Mike. They've done it with a lot of these guys. Is they'll tell them before the game, hey, I need to get a look at somebody, you know, these three guys. And so in order to do that, you've got to sit tonight. And they're up front with them. It's not just like a mystery, like, oh, let's see if I can play this guy tonight. No, I mean, they know what they're doing. And, like, honestly, like, the results that happened this year, I don't think they really matter to anybody, like, within the team or anybody. I mean, I don't know that for sure, but I just don't get the impression that it's something that they're super worried about. And you look at just like the two-man groups for the Thunder, and there's just a lot that just aren't really working. And I'm just intrigued to see how these develop. Like, Shea and Lou are a positive. They're a plus 1.8 on the season, which is pretty good. Shea and Giddy are a minus 9.8 so far this season. Giddy and Dort are a minus 10. Shea and Poku are a minus 1. I mean, there's just a lot of these two-mans that just aren't working. One that does work, and maybe this is a stealth tank here. Shea and Wiggins are a plus 12, which is pretty interesting.
What's Shea and Isaiah Joe?
It's got to be through the roof. Hold on, let me see if I can find it. It's not very many minutes is the problem. But it's got to be through the roof, because the two games where Isaiah Joe has come in and just, like, flipped the script. I mean, he was, what was he the other night? Plus 17?
Yeah, he was 7 of 10 from the three-point line.
He was so good. What do we do with that? What do we do with Isaiah Joe? Like, what's the, I don't know. What do we do with him?
I mean, it's hard for me not to look at Isaiah Joe, especially against the Nuggets, and be like, he's the shooter that we want Trey Mann to be.
Yeah. Gildas Alexander and Joe are a plus 28 and a half. And yeah, 50. It's only 50 minutes. So
yeah. Yeah, and he just does exactly what you want, where he's a spacer. And you could see the defense against the Nuggets. You could see the defense intentionally switching the way they defended it when he was on the floor, which is going to ultimately give them so many more options if they can get – they need a shooter. They need a shooter – like a pure guy that can be on the floor for a long time. And right now, Isaiah Joe is just about the only guy you trust out there outside of Shea. You know, that would get consistent looks, you know, as a perimeter player. I know Jerry is still probably shooting over 40%, and Omiyuri's probably dropped back down on earth a little bit. But Isaiah Joe, he was special in that night, man. He is one of those guys that when he shoots, you kind of trust that it might be going in. That's why I love, and I've mentioned this in the text thread, there's two guys that in the draft thinking about where the Thunder could be for 2023 and just recognizing they're not, I wouldn't assume that they're going to have top three odds. Things could change, but I would not assume that they're going to have that 14.5% or 13.5% to get top odds. But but then you start getting to the Cam Whitmore, which Vecini's top 100 came out today. He's number four on his top 100.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But Grady Dick out of Kansas is the guy that I'm like, he
where is he on Sam's theory, list? I haven't looked at Sam's list.
Oh, I didn't even see what his number was on that. But if you look at, I'll look that up while we're talking. But if you look at a skill set, competitor, tall, looks like he's got a good NBA wing body. On top of that, to mention the fact that like one of the things that it seems like he's going to be elite at is shooting.
Yeah,
he could just be kind of that piece that, I don't know, man. It just would be a huge deal for 15th. This team. Yeah, 15th.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I like it. I like him too. I think they need somebody like him. I think that's. I also like Anthony Black out of Arkansas. Is really interesting.
Yeah.
He like screams Thunder player to me just because he just knows what's going on the court. There's some interesting players in this draft outside of the top two.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun draft. Now, I think this will be not, I'm not trying to hijack this for draft conversation. We have plenty of time to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I do think that there's some intrigue to, for the Thunder timeline, plus their assets, plus the depth of talent in this group, to see them utilize some of these future assets to get maybe two guys in the top 15 in this draft. It makes a ton of sense to me, but
that'd be great. I'd be very into that. Yeah. This, with regards to shooting, I mean, they've got five guys. So you can say, let's say six guys shooting above 38% from three so far this season. Shea at 38%. He's 19 of 50. Aaron Wiggins, who's 10 of 25. Poku, my sturdy boy Poku, 42.3% from three on 22 of 52. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl, just a little bit ahead of Poku at 22 of 51, 43%. Eugene dropped to 46%, 6 of 13. And then Isaiah Joe, 15 of 29, 51.7% from three. Pretty wild.
I'm sorry. Like, I still don't think I realized that Poku is shooting 42.3% from the three-point line.
He's doing that. He's 50% from the field, 60 of 120 this season. The only place where he just cannot buy a bucket is the free throw line. He's 8 of 15 from the free throw line, but he just doesn't shoot free throws either.
So. It was actually a pretty pivotal moment in that game is when he went on the free throw line, missed the first one, but I think it was Jokic or Gordon stepped into the lane, which they never call that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, never call that. And then they got a second one, and it hit almost identical way of missing. But then he made the second one, but I don't know. That was a fun game. It was a fun game. The Thunder, I thought, had every chance to win the game, obviously, but just didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Next question at Twice Gotti. What are you most thankful for with this team?
That it's enjoyable and fun to watch this year. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm enjoying every single game. It's must see TV for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. It's gotta be Poku. Poku's like at the top of the list for me. He's just so much fun to watch this season. 10 points, 5 boards, 1.7 assists. Almost 2 blocks per game, and then just like actually making shots. I mean, we said that last year. I mean, I probably said the phrase several times. Like, at some point, you have to make shots. You know, like the pushing the pace and being a connector or whatever is just not enough if you can't make shots. And
he heard you.
He's on fire out the gate. I don't know that it continues at this clip where he's 50-40. Well, he's 50-40-50 right now, but. Even if he stayed at that, I mean, that would be outrageous. You know?
It has to be one of the first times in the history that somebody that shot over 40% from the three-point line shot 50% from the free throw line.
I think Bruce Bowen did that back in the day.
That makes sense. Similar players, you know.
They're very similar. Well, I'm still just, my mind is still blown that when I asked Mark about him in the preseason, that Mark mentioned Draymond Green whenever he mentioned Poku. You know, it's just like, what? Like, excuse me? What does that mean? Super thankful for Poku. And obviously, like, Shea's season has been Like, I don't even know what to say anymore. I mean, he's 31, 5-6, 1.8 steals, 1.4 blocks, shooting 51% from the field, 38% from three, 91.7% from the line. And 14-for-14 in this last game. And this was the I'm a superstar game, because he did not shoot it well from the field. He's 8-of-20, but 14-of-14 from the free throw line to get to his 30 points. Like, that was like the Kevin Durant special back in the day, where it's like, how did Kevin get 30 again? You know, I mean, that's Shea right now. It's just, how does he do that? I mean, he's been outrageous this season. And, you know, whatever you think about Giddy and whatever else, I don't know. Like, this is still more than what we could have asked for from Shea, honestly, and from this team, that it almost takes the expectations of everybody else up a little bit. Because, like, oh, we're getting this great stuff from Poku, we're getting this great stuff from Shea. Well, where is it from this guy? Or where's Trey Mann? Where is this? Where's that? And it's like, well, like, you can only get so much. Like, if everybody improved, then this team would just be like a title contender. But when you look at Shea's game logs, I mean, it's 31 points, 30 points. He had the one down game in Memphis where he had 15, but then it was 42, 37, 37, 20, 39, 33, 18, 37, 34, 38, 24, 33, 28, 32. It's like, holy smokes. Like, this guy just gets buckets every single night, and there's just nothing anybody can do.
Is it at all concerning? So after that Washington game, where he went absolutely bananas, 14-22, right? Like, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible game-winning shot, all those different things. He is in a bit of a slump. Shot 33% against Memphis, 41% against New York, and then 40% against Denver. Like, is there anything of that that's concerning, or you think it's just a natural ebb and flow of a...
Yeah, I think he's cooled off a little bit from what he was, and he'll bounce back, and he'll have another week where he shoots poorly. I mean, that's just how guys perform. But if you're still finding ways whenever you're in a quote-unquote slump to get 30,
yeah,
like the past two games he's gotten 30 and 31 when he's not shooting well.
Yeah, and both of those is because, I mean, he's 12-of-13 against the Knicks and then 14-of-14 against the Nuggets, and so that's the way to do it.
If he would have gotten a call in Memphis... For whatever reason, they just weren't blowing the whistle in Memphis. You know, he had the one free throw that was a tech free throw, and like, that was it, which is crazy. And Mark talked about it after the Nuggets game. He was asked about his own tech that he got. It was off of a foul that he believes should have been called on Poku. But then,
yes,
he went in to talk about how they lead the league in drives and how, you know, most fouls are in the paint. And they live in the paint, but they don't get the same respect, basically. And so a lot of that was with Shea. I mean, I'm in earshot of him during most home games, and he is constantly screaming at the officials, calling them by their first name, which I think is just so funny. Just screaming at them by their first name, calling them over and saying, Gilgeous Alexander this, Gilgeous Alexander that. So it's just he's fighting for him. And I mentioned this the other day, that Shea doesn't really fight for himself all that often, or doesn't really very dramatically fight for himself as far as free throws go. In fact, like, he goes out of his way after games to just talk about how the officials are human beings, you know, which can be refreshing, but it's also just like, he might as well just say, hey, I love money and I don't want to lose money.
Yeah, I don't want to pay the league $30,000. No thanks.
Yeah. So anyways, he's been absolutely unbelievable. But yeah, lots to be thankful for with this team.
Yeah.
Let's see. At 405 fan, who has been better this year between Giddy, Dort, Poku, and J-Dub? Let's rank those four as far as how
good. Oh, no. I don't want to do that.
How good they've been this year.
I think of those four, I'd put... Who'd they say? So J-Dub, Poku, Dort, Giddy?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say Giddy fourth.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Oh, this is total bias homerism. I would say Dort third.
Okay.
Poku second and J-Dub first.
I kind of think Poku's been so good on both ends.
Yeah, it's just hard to detach like the homerism inside of me where I'm like, I think if you're grading on a scale of versus expectation, that's probably more so why Poku is number one on that.
I mean, he's
been awesome. And I mean, it's partially joking, but I think there is some reality to the fact that you can see a distinct difference in this team when he's on the floor as far as when they play and when he's not. Like those few games that he's missed with the ankle injury, like he makes an impact on this team, which is probably a sign of why they're not quite ready to make a run the way people think they are. But at the same time, it's an encouraging reality of what his potential could be.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. Dort is just the loudest mistake maker of this group.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it tough to, you know, really give him props for the stuff.
Yeah, it's probably
does.
Unfair.
He shot the ball pretty well. I'm trying to pull up the stat. NBA.com/stats is being slow for me. But he shot the ball well from three recently. And especially in that Nuggets game, I thought that he played really well. I thought defensively he was spot on. I thought that he took the right kinds of shots, too.
Yeah, he was great in that game.
I thought he played really well. Yeah, he is. Man, these numbers are crazy. So the last five games from three, he's 45.8% on almost five attempts. So he's played really well.
That's Dort?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's the last five games. Let me see if I can not have the worst podcast ever with NBA.com just not going fast enough, and it's probably my computer. But
it's fitting for the week, man.
It is. It's spot on for the way that my life has been this week. He's definitely it's like turn around the Titanic with him though. The last 10 games, he is 40% from 3. On five attempts per game. I mean, he's 30% now on the season, but it's like turning around the Titanic with how bad his percentages were to start the season. Like he was bricking so many threes and taking so many threes that, yeah, he's gone a 10-game stretch shooting 40% on five attempts per game, but it still is like barely made the dent that you want it to.
Yeah.
Because it was just so bad. But I think Dort's been better lately. I think that he's played really well. He's taken more corner threes. He's playing really good defense.
Yeah.
I mean, I would...
Once again, that's why I'm saying it's expectations and probably personal preference, honestly. Yeah. Like, I really do love J-Dub's game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I like what he brings. He was probably his best game, and I'm not... This is just... I'll tell him. He had probably his best game of the season against the Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously got the minutes as part of that. He was the fifth most minutes. Well, no, fourth most minutes.
Yeah.
Of the entire team. And it paid off, right? He's two or three from the 3-point line, which that's a big deal. He does not generate a ton of confidence in me when he shoots the three right now.
Yeah, it's pretty flat.
But the only way you're going to get there is by figuring it out and continue to do so. But 6-6 from the free throw line. 4-9 overall. Like, I don't know. I just thought it was a good game. He also fouled out, but which I didn't even realize that, but probably a reason why Giddy played so much in overtime.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been really fun. I think 405 fan asked this because it's a really hard question, because I think that there's, if we're judging Dort from the last 10 games, he's probably been the best guy of that group. You have to give the whole season. So I think that Dort's kind of in the middle of that group. Poku to me is at the top. And Giddy, I mean, you look at Giddy's like overall stats and it's like, I don't know, like he's been okay. Like he has not been as bad as what people, you know, make it out to be. You know, 15 points per game, 7 boards, almost 6 assists per game. You know, the only thing that's rough is that he's just not shooting well from 3, but he's 52% from 2. You know, I mean, that's good enough. You know, that's good enough for Giddy. And he's just got the three ball. Just we need to see it fall a little bit more. And he's got to shoot a little bit better around the rim as well. But I don't know, man. I feel like he's been pretty good. And corner threes this season, Giddy's 66%. It hadn't been on a high volume. But if you can get him corner threes, I mean, that's a shot that he has proven that he can make. So I think that we're hard on Josh, mostly because he's, of all those guys, he's the highest drafted guy. He's the one that is thought of as a part of the core more than any of those four. But, and he's going to be under the microscope just a lot more than everybody else too. So, but I like that group of players. It's great that there's positives to take away from all four of those guys, you know, where like one of them's a rookie, one in Poku was just a mystery box of a player. And then I think Gideon Dort were kind of where they were last year as well. But to add those two to this group is like, that's pretty good. Jack T says, start, bench, cut. Here's our first group of start, bench, cut. Poku, J-Dub, Trey Mann.
Okay, say the start, bench, cut, Poku, Trey Mann, and...
Poku, J-Dub, Trey Mann. Also, can you close your eyes and tell me how many minutes Trey Mann played against the Nuggets?
Oh, I kind of maybe looked at this. I think it's like 12 or something. 18.
Yeah, 18 minutes. It was... I mean, he just...
He has not been the same since coming back from that injury, to be fair.
Exactly. He just didn't do anything in that game. But, okay.
All right, start so, bench cut. Well, that makes me think that I'm cutting Trey Mann.
Yeah. Who are you going to start?
I mean, we can't follow up the conversation we just had and not say that I'm starting Alexi Pokuševski.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you got to. You got to. And then you're going to bench J-Dub. I think that's probably correct. Next one. Start, bench, cut. Usman Jang, Wiggins, Jeremiah Robinson, Earl.
You're going to hate me for this. I'm cutting Jang. Probably not really who we should cut, but just on a personal level.
Us has got poor Us. He's been sick this week, too. Now he's getting all all this stuff from Jay. Poor Usman.
It makes genuinely no sense. Like, he is the highest upside of those three without question. I'm just like, I
the youngest of the three. I mean, like, I think he's 4 years younger than
Wiggins
these guys.
Or JRE. Those are my dudes, man.
They're awesome. And I think Wiggins is I think he would play on a lot of teams. I think he's just a good basketball player. And I think a really good pick, you know, in the late second round for the Thunder. He's just a good player. Jeremiah is, I would probably start.
Hold on.
Wait.
Are we cutting Jay Will, like Jalen Williams?
Huh? No. Usman Jang, Wiggins, Jeremiah.
Okay. All right. I was like, when you said second round, I forgot that Wiggins was second round. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm starting Aaron Wiggins because every game that he starts, the Thunder win. So I'll start Wiggins, I'll bench Oos, and I'll cut Jeremiah. There's a lot there with Jang. It is a volatile situation. I think that things could be great. I think he could be out of the league. You know, I don't know. I have no idea what to think about him, but it's just not time to make any judgments on him either, and I'm not saying that you're doing that specifically. I just think that you like.
No, I am. It's unfair. I own it. Like, I 100% am. But
so there was actually
I didn't love him going into the draft.
Right. I was not a big Usman fan either at the draft. However, I start to understand why they did what they did with him. So let me pull up this quote. Mark had this quote about Jang a few days ago that I thought was really interesting. Let's see. Gosh, I'm struggling today. Like, I'm just straight up struggling with...
It's been a week, man.
Just about everything today. But he just talked about how there's a long runway. Here it is. He said, Us is so young. It's easy to get lost in the season. We're trying to develop the team, and the window we're looking at is super long term. We're trying to take the long view with him and the team. He's a player who needs patience and needs to be worked with. So there's like, I mean, that's Mark just identifying right away that, hey, this guy is going to take time and he needs a lot of work. And the Thunder are developing a track record where you can feel a little bit more trusting of that. with a guy like Poku, who at times looked hopeless, you know?
Yes.
And
yeah, Jing hasn't looked that chaotic.
No, he just disappears is the thing with Jing. He doesn't play with force. He doesn't. I mean, I watched him in person play the Ignite, and if I would have said, hey, guess the guy on the blue that was a lottery pick in the last draft, I think it would have you would have guessed seven guys before you got to him. And just you would have been like, the tall guy that moves pretty good, like that guy? It's like, yeah, that's the guy. I think you would have had to go to a lot of different guys, cycle through them to figure out who it was, just because he can fade into the background. But I think that's a really good quote from Mark, not only on Jang, but for this whole team.
It makes sense to the rotations.
Yes.
Being that's his way of moving forward.
Yes. So I just think that's something to keep in mind, is that the team is starting to come into focus. And that, I think, pushes the fan base closer to expectations.
Yep.
But I
100% nailed it.
That doesn't push the team to it, though. I think is something that I think Mark is trying to get that across, is that we're taking the long view. Shea's been awesome. We believe in Giddy, Dort. We know Chet's coming back next year. Poku's taking a step up. We believe in J-Dub. But still, this is going to be a long process. And so for those of you that are like, what can they do at the trade deadline? What are we going to do, you know, if somebody comes available this summer? You can go ahead and just nix all of that. Any of those kind of thoughts. Like, you can just remove those thoughts just completely, because they want this to have a long runway. And nothing has changed, too. Like, I think the way that we have enjoyed the Thunder this year, that's the only thing that's changed. Nothing the team does has changed. Nothing that they're going to do has changed. I think it just is. I think the Thunder are what they are, and they're going to continue to do it. Whether they win a ton of games or they don't, they're still going to say, yeah, that's great. This is a long runway. Oh, we lost 10 in a row? Yep, long runway. Oh, we won 10 in a row? That's cool. Still going to be a long runway. And I think that's just the way that it's going to be. And so I just thought that was kind of a little bit of insight into the way that that Mark and the team are thinking about this. Let's see.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army Knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is from at James Ingle 29. What predict your season high for J-Dub?
Is it wild to think he could score 30?
No. Especially if we're in April.
Would
and,
you go?
And
would you go over under 30?
I'd probably go under, but he could have a night where the only thing to me is just, is he going to take enough shots? And he would, to me, it would have to be a night where maybe Shea is out and maybe even Giddy is out and he's like the primary ball handler for the night. And then, yeah, he could do that. But he may not have that opportunity. To me, is he going to have that kind of opportunity at some point this season? I would lean toward yes, he is going to. But to me, it's shot attempts. I mean, he's had double-digit shot attempts in 4 games this whole season. In 14 games, only 4 times has he taken double-digit shots.
Even in that game where he played 30 minutes, he only shot 9 times.
Yeah, you just can't get to 30 that way. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, against Denver, he took 9 shots and had 16 points. I mean, to me, he's playing pretty efficient basketball. I think he's taking the right kinds of shots. And, you know, he's shooting 50% from the field.
Have you noticed... I tried to kind of articulate this maybe last Friday, is that Jay Will, I know he still has some decent percentages finishing at the basket, but it definitely, there are moments where he tries to play it off the backboard and he does not have that finesse shot down yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think he finishes well, obviously, when he's attacking the rim and he can dunk it. But man, when he tries to do something else, it gets kind of sketchy. That's one of my only things. I think his 3-point shot makes me nervous. And then he does this little backboard. It's almost like a trying to lay it up kind of thing, but it just hits so hard off the backboard.
Yeah, he definitely needs to improve that. I think his first shot of the game was like that, if I'm remembering right. And I think, to me, he's trying to get a foul call, too, is that he knows, like, if he can get his body into somebody in the lane, I think that he wants to, you know, get there and get a foul call. And he's been pretty good at that. I mean, he's getting to the free throw line quite a bit. You know, I think he was, like, 5th or 6th on San Vicini's, it's like rookie rankings, I think.
Yeah.
Which is cool to see. And he's played like that. There's been some really good standout rookies, and I think he's just kind of on the tier below those guys just because he's not like Paolo or Ben Mathurin or anything like that, but he's playing a role on a team that's decent in Oklahoma City, and I think he's shown quite a bit. You know, there's a lot to be excited about with a guy like him. I think there's a lot of people would say, oh, man, he's maybe low upside. I don't agree with that. I think he's got too much skill to be a low ceiling guy. I think it's unfair to him to say that. Let's see. Dort Poi says, what could OKC's version of the Kings beam be? We need that beam team vibes. It's one of my favorite things of the season. It's hilarious.
It's taking over. I mean, the Kings in general are kind of taking over a lot of the conversation, but that beam in specific.
Yeah. It's amazing. I don't know. The Thunder just aren't going to do anything cool. So.
Fair.
That's what I'll say. I think they'll just drop some confetti and play the song Celebrate Good Times Come On.
Or maybe if they want to mix it up and go to the Black Eyed Peas, I've got a feeling.
I got a feeling. It's another one. Or Taking Care of Business, if you want to play that one.
Ooh.
You know, Maybe you get crazy. I don't know.
Who does that fall on? Is that Sam that makes those decisions?
I don't think so. That would be really funny if it was. Like, Sam is like, all right, it's a taking care of business kind of night. Let's do this.
No, I didn't mean like the specific song. I meant more like, hey, this is what we're going to do for in-game entertainment is we're going to be as vanilla as possible.
Oh, yeah, probably. I'm sure he, I mean, he definitely has.
It's just a culture organizational kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could turn the Paycom green lights to blue lights. It's blue light night, you know.
Ooh.
That might be as cool as it would get. But I don't think they're going to do that. Obviously, Paycom paid money for those lights to be green. So, I don't know. Dortpoi, I'm sorry. I just don't have faith in the Thunder doing anything cool. They're just going to stay solid and, you know, not take any chances. I think that's what they, honestly, that's what I think they do, is that they don't really take any chances on something being one way or the other. It's just like straight down the middle. We're just throwing fastballs only. Okay. Let's see. At underscore Tyler OKC, we have a lot of one-dimensional players. By this, I mean we have players who defend well but can't shoot consistently, or shooters that can't really defend. What do you think is a smarter way of going about the next drafts? Drafting shooters and developing their defensive instincts, or draft high upside defensive pieces and hope Chip works his magic? Essentially, what should be prioritized, easier to develop shooting or defense?
That's a great question. I think all of us are a little bit burned by waiting for Robertson to develop a shot.
Yeah.
You know, I know Thabo had one good season, I think, maybe two good seasons. But
yeah,
for the most part, there's always been kind of that open wing spot where somebody wasn't efficient at shooting. And so I think getting a shooter, and this is where I think that there's natural defensive instincts that people can learn or people just come with. But I do think that a good effort on that end can really cover up a lot of the mistakes. So if you've got a guy that can shoot well but is willing to put in the work to improve, maybe he doesn't have the best, like Giddy. I think Giddy has the potential to be a decent defensive player, and you see it from time to time. I think often he's playing out of position defensively, like trying to guard wings is just not his thing because he doesn't have the foot speed. But I do think you have the will for Giddy. And I think that the truth about defense is if you have that, you can really make up for a lot of the natural instinctive shortfalls of somebody on defense.
I would kind of disagree with the assessment that I think that's true of the guys at the end of the roster. When we're talking about like Baisley and Isaiah Joe and Eugene and, you know, Lindy Waters, like I think that's true of those guys, but like Wiggins and Trey Mann and Poku and J-Dub and Giddy and Dort and Shea are not one-dimensional players. Like these are multi-dimensional players and decision makers. And I think that the one thing that we have to, the one box that needs checked if we're checking draft boxes is, can they make a decision? Because I think if they're going to be a part of the next iteration of the Thunder, you can't just be a shooter. You can't just be a defender. You have to be able to do multiple things, including make decisions with the basketball in order to be a part of this next team. And that's what, like, Jeremiah Robinson Earl can do that. You know, Kenrich Williams can do that. Aaron Wiggins can do that. Trey Mann, Poku. Like, I went through the list before. Like, this is to me, like, what the next version of the Thunder look like. And so sometimes you're going to get a better defender out of that kind of player, and sometimes you're going to get a better shooter out of that kind of player. I think the hope is, and the reason they brought in Chip, is they want to turn these multi-dimensional playmaking play, you know, guys that are big and small and whatever into shooters too. And so I think they're kind of tipping their hand a little bit and saying like, hey, obviously we believe in the defensive development that Mark and his team produce, and Dave Bliss is like a huge part of that too, but we're bringing in the best shooting coach that anybody's even aware of, and I don't know what they're paying him. It's got to be a lot of money, and they're saying, well, let's invest, and let's see where we go. And right now, like we mentioned at the top of the show, you have six players shooting 40% or 38% or better from three. And that's not a common phrase. And you can take Eugene out of that because it's too small of a sample. But still, having five guys doing that is like, that's pretty good. And then you have the guys that toward the bottom. Like I know Trey Mann's going to be a better shooter than what he is. It's really just on Giddy and J-Dub and Dort. Like, can we get one of those guys to be decent? That to me is kind of where they're at right now as far as like drafting and whatnot. But
yeah,
let's see. This is from at @Sam_Mark_Kelly. Predict, will you be higher on J-Dub than any active OKC player except Shea by New Year's, the All-Star break, end of the season, none of the above, or I already am? Think
none of the above.
He's definitely Chet. Removing Chet from it. So, but yeah, okay.
I'm still none of the above.
Okay.
I still like the potential of Poku, like just because of his body. I think it's the big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Williams, J-Dub has length as far as his wingspan is giant, but he's not the size of somebody that makes you go, oh man, this guy could be a unicorn kind of thing. I think that I still probably I'm high on Giddy. I'm not giving up on Giddy, man. And I know there's some people in the Thunder fan base that are ready to do that, but I'm still pretty high on Giddy, mainly because I also watched like last season and you see these glimpses of it where he's still performing at like the Knicks game in Madison Square Garden where he's unbelievable. And he even hits that, you know, spinning floater off the backboard in the overtime. Like there are moments where you see this potential of Giddy. I think Giddy is having the most trouble figuring out what his role is on a very Shea dominant team.
Yep.
And I think that we massively underestimate that. And we massively underestimate the mental aspect of that to where you're, when you're thinking too hard, especially for a guy like Giddy, when you're thinking so hard about what's right and wrong to do, is you're not going to be as instinctive as he naturally is. And it's creating problems for him. And so he's trying, like a lot of his turnovers are trying to force things that just aren't there. And when he's not thinking about it, he can back it out, move the ball around. But when he's trying to make himself assertive into this offense, I think it creates these problems. That's why I'm still really high on Giddy as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think Giddy, I don't think he'll surpass Giddy this season. Is it impossible that he does in the future? No, it's not impossible, but I still think Giddy has a higher ceiling just because he's bigger, and I think that the way that he processes and thinks the game, the way that he works, I believe in his future as well. Let's see. At K Espenin. That's definitely not right. With KD recently complimenting the Thunder again, is it time that we finally bury the hatchet and forgive him? Bonus Twitter question, if he wanted to play on the team when his current deal expires with Shea, Giddy, Chet, and whoever we draft this year, do we retire his number? I think they're going to retire his number anyways.
Yeah, and they should.
Yeah.
I'm honestly, I'm over the KD stuff. Like, it sucks, but it's long enough now where I'm like, yeah, whatever. I would welcome him back to the team, even if he wanted to come play.
Yeah, we're like three or four iterations of the team removed, you know, from that pain. And, you know, things have gone poorly enough with him him leaving Golden State and him just
the failure situation.
Happened. Yeah. Oh, it makes it. If he was winning, if he won like five titles in a row, I think that I'd still have like this, you know, this venom for him probably because it's just like, man, that should have been here, man. That should have been here.
Yeah, the whole Nets situation is like his penance.
Yeah, like what's happening right now, I do not say that should have been here. I'm saying I'm glad this is elsewhere. I'm glad that this goes to the Nets fans and that's not here right now. I think he is forgiven. Not that he has been waiting for any of us to forgive him. He doesn't care. But yeah, I think it's time to forgive Kevin. And if he wants to come back as a free agent, super cool. That would be so much fun. I think that would be amazing. I think it'd be amazing for his career to, if he decided, like, I just want to end it in Oklahoma City. You know, I've done all I can do for Brooklyn or for whatever the team that he gets traded to. And he's like, look at this Thunder team. They're on the up and up. They really just kind of need one more piece. I'll be that one more piece. Is that a pipe dream that will never happen? Yep, it is. Yep, never going to happen. He's not going to do that. But would it be cool? Yes, very cool. I would be very, very much up on that happening.
The last time you said that, man, was when you told me that Carmelo Anthony was never going to be a part of the Thunder.
This,
so.
This is part of me making
it happen.
This is a
reverse jinx, yes. And I like
so,
this.
Good. So just, yeah, good. Yeah, it's never going to happen. Never.
Yeah, never.
Never, ever. Not going to happen. Okay, let's see. Rank, this is from at KJ3MD. Rank in terms of probability of becoming an all-star. Giddy, Jang, J-Dub. The 23 pick, Poku and Trey Mann. Becoming an all-star.
Pick.
Yeah, 23 pick, number one. Giddy, number two.
Trey Mann, three?
I'd put J-Dub over him.
Yeah. All I'm thinking about Trey Mann, so somebody's going to be left out at some point. I could see Trey Mann being the guy that, like, some point the Thunder trade him to find something else and...
Trade man.
He ends up becoming the Victor Oladipo in Indiana kind of guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think
gets all the shots and
I think there is a reality that at some point picks and one of these guys is going to be packaged for something or someone.
Yep.
You know, I think that is definitely a reality. But I think it's Giddy, or I think it's 23 pick Giddy, J-Dub. I don't know if Poku can be like an all-star, especially with the way that he's like settled into this kind of player. Like, I just think, to me, if Poku can continue to hone these skills as like your fourth starter, like, man, is that valuable to this team? Because right now they need what he gives them. And it's when he's not there, you notice. And if he start, I mean, There's definitely a world where he's the one that starts next to Chet, especially if he can shoot.
Yeah.
And
no question.
Then they both can protect the rim. I mean, this is a pipe dream that is possible, and it's starting to get me like overly excited about the future of the Thunder, just because I just really like Poku. You know? But I don't know that he can be an all-star. But
no.
I think that Giddy 23 pick Giddy and J-Dub are the ones that actually have a chance to do it. Just because like I mentioned before, like I believe in Giddy and J-Dub's ceilings.
The hard part is you have to remember, like, the teams that get more than one all-star are elite. The teams that get more than two are like all-time great teams.
Right.
So I think about the Warriors. The Warriors have gotten... Yes. Three, and then that random Hawks team that basically set the world on fire.
Yeah, they had like 60 wins. I think the Pistons were another team that had a bunch of all-stars. Yeah.
That was just because the East was wild.
Yeah.
And Ben Wallace and Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton and mm-hmm. Rasheed Wallace.
Yep. Yeah, that was a good team. But yeah, getting a third all-star is so tough. It's so, so tough to actually make that happen.
You have to be out of this world good.
Yeah. Speaking
like of... Like these Suns teams, mm-hmm. you get Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and, I mean, Ayton, but the chance of all three of them making it... Or Miles Bridges, I guess. Mikal Bridges. Not Miles. Oh, Lord.
Jay's Turn already beating the drum for the Miles Bridges for the All-Star.
No, I'm not. 100% not.
Kobe Zeller says, seven deserving West guards, only a max of six all-star spots. Who does not make the cut? Steph, Luka, Ja, Dame, Booker, Fox, and Shea. I think it's Dame. I mean, Dame has been the worst of that group this year. He's missed a lot of time because of two different injuries.
The benefit is you've got the the fan vote. This is where it could get screwed up if there's somebody that the fans like that's going to kick one more of those guys out. But the fans will elect, I mean, I would assume Luka and Steph. And then you're moving towards Ja probably.
Yeah, Ja. And then
your coaches figure out the rest of them.
Yeah. And the coaches, with the improvements that the Blazers have made, they may lead Dame just because of that. But Shea has
They also had love enough. Shea, it seems like.
Yeah. It's possible that he doesn't make it in favor of Dame, just because if you've made the All-Star team, you're likely to make it again. And it's just tough to get your first All-Star berth. I could see there being like a debate between Fox and Shea. And if the Kings continue to win, then the nod may go to De'Aaron Fox. So I don't know. I think it's, and then there's usually an injury that happens and somebody will get plugged in and it'll
almost
probably
always
be Shea.
For sure.
So I don't know. We'll wait and see. It's still pretty, it's still a little early to discuss that, but if it were me, I'd be cutting Dame out of that group and everybody else stays in as far as like the way the guys have played this season. Okay, this might be the most important question that we've had in a long time. At Will G. Galbraith. Braith. He says, I feel like now is the perfect time to ask. Has Poku reached guy status? He's played 15 games this season. As we mentioned earlier, 10 points, 5 boards, 1.7 assists, 1.9 blocks, 50, 40, 50 shooting splits. Is he a guy?
You've gotten far too liberal with guy status. It's a problem.
Yeah, I haven't declared anyone a guy this season yet.
But there's guys that have an existing guy status from previous conversations. Or does it reset every year?
It doesn't reset. You know, Deonte Burton, who I think is playing in the G League now, still has guy status playing in the G League.
Poku's a guy. Come on, man.
I think he is. I think it's time to declare guy status for Poku. He has done enough this season through 15 games, and maybe that just sounds dumb. Maybe that's dumb. I don't know. I've said a lot of dumb things in my life, and that might be my next one. But I don't think so. I think Poku's really developed. I think he deserves guy status. Let's go, Poku. Congratulations. You finally made it to something on a Niche Thunder podcast about something that doesn't quite make a lot of sense to most people. Congratulations. Let's see. Ben Elephant King wants to know, who's in charge of the Kiss Cam and why do they hate having a superstar in OKC? Did you see this?
No.
So Shea's girlfriend was put on the Kiss Cam next to, I don't know if it was a friend or like her brother or something, and they kept going back to her over and over again. And she felt very embarrassed. It was very weird. Just totally awkward times in Oklahoma City. I guess you got to alert the cameramen who our superstars' girlfriends are. But
I see her all the time.
Oh,
all
yeah?
All the time.
Where
by
at?
That I mean twice.
Just like around?
Yeah. So she, I told you all that story, is I saw her one time walking her little puppy dog over here. So where we live has this huge track. And it's packed. And so I saw her there one time when the dog was a puppy. And then the other day I'm pulling up. I don't even know who to notice who it is, but you start putting two together where I'm like, okay, she's got Canada basketball gear on.
Yeah.
And she's got a dog that looks just like the dog that was a puppy and now is a puppy. But I guess they live close enough by me to where they can come and like they walk the track by my house all the time. So anyway.
Yeah.
So if I was the cameraman, there would be no mistake.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird when you keep going back to people on the Kiss Cam where it's like two people that obviously don't want to kiss, and you're like, kiss.
Do it.
It's weird. It's weird. The
too much.
Yeah, you know, for as much as the organization doesn't want to do cool things like the beam, As much as they want to force
people to kiss
that don't want to kiss to kiss, like that's too much, okay? If they say no the first time, you have to respect it. You know, so it's like some, it was like also like teenagers that were maybe like on their first date or something when she's just like, no, I'm not going to do it. And he's just sitting there like, I would like to do it, but she doesn't want to do it.
Oh.
And they kept going back to him.
I just get so much single or secondhand embarrassment for stuff like that.
Yes, don't do that. Don't do that. That is wrong. That's morally wrong. That's just straight up bad. I don't get that. Okay. I think that's it. I hope you guys are having a great Thanksgiving time. I hope you guys are enjoying it. The Thunder play the Chicago Bulls in OKC tonight.
I'll be there.
Nice. Nice. I don't know if I'll be there. I don't know if my kids will be well enough for me to be there. I hope I can be there. But Chicago's kind of fun.
Bulls are playing really well too, man.
Yeah, the Bulls are good. This is Billy Donovan's return. You know, will he get a something up on the Jumbotron?
His jersey retired.
Yeah, will we get his jersey? I think he has a beard. At least the last time I saw him on League Pass, he had a beard.
Oh no.
Which seems weird. He if I were running, game ops, I would be playing over and over again, anytime that there's like a blunder between, with the Bulls, I would have him leaning over and saying, "Can't play Caner." Somebody just up on the Jumbotron.
Just push the button every time.
Yep. That's like a top five or maybe even top three Billy Donovan moment for him in the NBA is Can't Play Caner, don't you think?
Yes.
It might be
not
number
exactly
one.
Exactly what you want to.
It might be the
not
number
exactly
one thing.
Exactly what you want to be your moment, but yes.
Yeah. Coaching up teams that aren't great at defense to be good at defense and then Can't Play Caner. Those are like Billy Donovan's two things.
Yeah, the Bulls' last three games a week ago on Friday, so a week ago, they lost to the Magic by 1 point, and then Monday and Wednesday beat the Celtics by 13 and the Bucks by 5. So who knows what
they
to expect.
Definitely losing tonight in Oklahoma City is what that's what
you
this
heard
means.
It here.
That's what this means. All right. You guys have a great weekend. We'll be back with another episode for you guys on Monday. We will talk to you guys then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.